All right, I want you to think back into your life and consider a time when you had to put the most effort into something. It was kind of intense for you. It might have been something that only lasted a few hours, but maybe it was something that lasted a few years. And not simply physical effort, but mental and emotional and even spiritual effort had to go along with this situation. I've shared with most of you that at the beginning of this year, I started flying lessons. And one of the very first things I had to do was to go to God about this, because I knew that taking on this new thing, endeavor, was going to cost a lot of resources. Yes, it cost a lot of money. It cost a lot of time. It's going to cost a lot of brain cells, and there's an emotional, aspect to it as well. And it's kind of intense. I wouldn't say this is the hardest thing I've had to go through, but it is intense. I'm literally learning a new language. So in aviation, we don't really say our ABCs. We say Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Elko, Echo, and so on. So I've had to kind of learn that. But along with that, I literally have to know way beyond the basics of weather. I'm becoming a meteorologist, and that has its own set of linguistics to go with it. There's math that goes with this, and that's painful. Now, thankfully, today with computers and things like that, it's not quite as taxing, but the FAA feels that for me to be prepared to fly on my own on a regular basis, I should know how to do the math in my head without any electronic help. And so I'm learning that. I am being honed in on my skill set of stewardship. Time, money, prioritizing. I've now been in the plane a little over 40 hours, and a handful of times, without warning, my instructor has said, "You just lost your engine. What are you going to do?" And I have to, in the moment, prioritize what I'm going to do. And emotions can't be part of it. I can't just simply panic. That's not going to help me out. I'm going to relate a story here over the next few minutes, and as you listen to it, you're going to hear a lot of these elements come into play. This story is very multifaceted, and as you listen to it, I'd like you to a little bit plug yourself into it. Is there a character that jumps out at you that you think you have similar characteristics to them? You know, have some similarities in your walk, or maybe some of the situations involved in it brings something back to mind. Ray Johnson had been in college for 4 years. However, he was still only a sophomore. He was at a somewhat small to medium-sized theological seminary college, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 students at it. Ray wasn't trying to be one of those lifelong students. It just took him longer and a little bit harder than most others due to his condition of dyslexia. Ray, most of the time, had great difficulty when it came to reading. And if you decide to go into college, there's going to be a lot of reading. It was obvious to a lot of those that are around Ray that he struggled in his classes. Ray was known around campus because often you would see him in the lounges, in the library, in the cafeteria, asking different individuals for help. Sometimes in rereading something that he wasn't fully grasping. Sometimes asking for greater clarity of a concept he was trying to, sink in. Sometimes he was asking someone to proofread his papers so that he could turn them in for a decent grade. Or maybe he was asking somebody to critique one of the speeches he had to give. Again, this was a seminary or / theological school. But he was noticed by quite a few as being very hardworking at trying to get good grades, but they weren't coming. Ray had to put a lot of effort into his academics, but he didn't allow that to stop him from participating in several clubs and service opportunities. Ray was embracing the entire college scene, in a sense. After 7 years, Ray was at the brink of finishing his second year of college. It's the end of April. He had been on and off academic probation. His grades, again, were extremely low. It was obvious to some around him that with finals right around the corner, there was a pretty big chance that Ray would be sent home. During this time, one of Ray's doormates came back from the campus post office one day and told him that, "Hey, Ray, I don't know if you've seen the old mailboxes that have the glass fronts. They're just the mail slots. They had the glass fronts. You had a key to your own little slot, and the slot would only hold regular letters in a sense." Well, this is before computers and email and all that, so snail mail and parcel post was the going thing. But his dorm mate come back and said, "Hey, Ray, I noticed that in your, when I went down to get my mail a little while ago, I noticed in your box, you've got one of the pink slips." And a pink slip was just simply a note that said that you had some type of parcel that was larger than the box, and you'd take the pink slip over to the counter, and the staff then would go and collect your item, whatever it was that didn't fit in your box. So Ray thanked him and went down to the school post office, retrieved his pink slip and went over to the counter. And the lady that retrieved it brought out a large letter size or legal size envelope, like a manila envelope. Wasn't a care package from home that maybe Ray was hoping for, but he moved off to the side and he opened up the envelope. And again, reading wasn't his strong suit, but he pulled out this piece of paper. He recognized that it was on the college's letterhead. It looked very official. He noticed that it was truly addressed to him. It was several short paragraphs. But what became, as he read over those paragraphs and tried grasping what all it was trying to say, it became to him pretty clear that essentially the letter read, "Ray, on May 6th, which is just a week or so away, graduation day, you will be graduating with honors, and all of your student debt has been forgiven. Didn't know what to make of this. Hadn't seen this coming. He had a short walk back to his dorm, and he's considering what's going on. What does this really mean? Where did this come from? He gets back to the dorm. He shows some of his dorm mates. He says, "Look what I got." And they couldn't believe it. In fact, a couple of the freshmen really couldn't believe it, because they said, "Isn't this the guy that's always begging for help in the lounge? Struggling with classes?" Some of the seniors didn't believe it. And they cornered Ray and they asked for a detailed account as to what had just taken place. And he told them, "I went to my mailbox. I had one of the pink slips in it. I turned it in, and they gave me this envelope. And in the envelope is this letter. And this is what it said." And then one of the seniors said, "There must be a mix-up. You know, your name is kind of a common name, Ray Johnson." He says, "You know, in one of my classes, there's a guy that's named Raymond John. I bet there was a mix-up and this letter was really for him." Ray said, "No. This letter has my student ID number on it. It's for me." Their inquiries kind of got cut short as it was time to head off to chapel. At chapel, a couple of the guys brought this situation up to a couple of the faculty members. Then after chapel, those faculty members pulled Ray aside as he was leaving and asked him, "What took place this afternoon, or what did you get?" So Ray told them basically that he'd been informed that he'd be graduating next week and with honors. The faculty members' skepticism was aroused. "Could we see the letter?" Ray says, "Yeah, I got it here in my jacket." He pulled it out and let them look at it. One of the faculty said, "That doesn't really look like official letterhead of the school." But another one says, "Oh no, that looks official to me. But I can't read the signature. It's just kind of a scribble." A couple of those faculty was very concerned over the letter. And as a subcommittee, decided to look into the matter much deeper. Later on, one of Ray's dorm brothers happened to be in an adjoining office room as a TA. When he could hear from the next room, this little subcommittee of faculty making a phone call to Ray's parents. They got him on speakerphone, and the dorm brother heard, "This is Professor so-and-so and a couple of my colleagues. Could we ask you a few questions about your son, Ray?" Mom and Dad said, "Sure." "Could you confirm for us that he truly has dyslexia?" "Oh, yeah. Back in elementary school, we had to have him tested. Then in middle school, he was tested again, And then near the end of high school, because of college, he was tested again. He has dyslexia. There was a bit of a pause. The professor asked the parents, has Ray ever been known to fib? Maybe stretch the truth a little bit. Didn't really want to call him a liar. But the parents said, oh no. No, Ray's always been an honest boy. Again, there was a pause. The professor then asked, well, did he happen to get word to you about a letter he's received recently? Oh, yes. He called us just a couple hours ago and told us that he'd be graduating with honors. He's extremely excited, and so are we. Do you know where he got that or who sent it? And all of a sudden, the Johnsons didn't like where this is headed. Because they had homeschooled Ray and his two younger brothers. And they'd already been met with skepticism on their ability to homeschool to a level that the public schools could give. And so, because sensing what this might be, where this might be going, they simply answered, you know, Ray knows the college's ways better than we do. He's an adult. We think it best that you talk to him about this directly. They ended the phone call. Subcommittee wasn't done, though. They got the dean of students involved. And then they summoned Ray once again to them. This time demanded the truth. Ray, we've looked into your records. You don't deserve to graduate. There's a big handful of classes that you've taken not twice, but even three times because you failed them. And your grades right now wouldn't get you to the point of passing. You don't deserve to graduate from this college. Of course, Ray really doesn't know how to respond to this. And he simply replies, all I know is I received a letter. It was addressed to me. And it says, I will be graduating with honors and my debt tuition has been forgiven. There was a student representative in the room. And he says, tell us again how you got this letter. Ray said, I've already told you. Are you wanting now to know just so you can get maybe your debt removed? Of course, this incensed the group a little bit more. Now there's a full-on attack demanding again the truth. We know you've struggled ever since you came to Moody and have failed many classes. Ray tries to hold in his emotions and control his responses. And he says, it is remarkable that I received this letter, but I believe what the letter states is accurate, and I plan to walk across that stage next week. He goes on just a little bit further. He says, I didn't simply come here for a degree. I came to get much more than that. Isn't that the goal of this school, to give more than just a degree? That didn't lessen the tempers or the anger of this little committee. Because one of them piped up and said, "This is a campus of higher learning, and we're going to see that it stays that way." Ray, you can now go back to your room, dorm, gather your things, as you are dismissed from this institution. Ray has to make that walk back to his dorm. When he gets there, there's an older gentleman standing at his doorway. He says, "Ray?" I said, "Yes, sir." "I understand you got a letter." He says, "Yes, sir." The older gentleman asked him, "Do you believe that it's real?" He said, "Yes, sir." The older gentleman says, "Do you believe that the person who signed it had the authority to do so?" Ray said, "I don't know the person who signed it." The gentleman says, "Well, he's here standing talking to you. I'm Dr. Joseph Christensen. A few days ago, I took over as the interim president of the school. I signed your letter. It's real. You are graduating, and your debt has been canceled." As interim president, I was hired to bring back law, order, and justice to this school. And I heard about your story. I heard how much work you have put in over the last 7 years. There's a lot of students that come through these halls and they don't work hard. They've got some talents, some abilities. Because of those talents and abilities, they can coast right on through with good grades. And they get their degree. But he says, "I heard that despite you're not passing a class, you didn't give up. I heard that you took the class over again, and sometimes for a third time, and each time working harder to pass that class." Ray, on paper, you don't qualify to graduate under any circumstance other than grace. Wherever God takes you as you depart this school, continue to put in or put forth the same efforts you have put here, and God will place you in higher places. Are you like Ray? Are you a professor? Are you one of the subcommittee? Are you a dorm mate? What jumped out at you about this story? Is God trying to talk to you right now? This is a true story. However, it did not take place in the halls of a college. Turn over to John 9. John 9, verse 1. As he walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he has been born blind?" And Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him." We must work the works of him who sent me while it is today. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And when he had said this, he spat on the ground, made mud with his saliva, and spread the mud on the man's eyes, and saying to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. Then he went and washed, and he came back able to see. And the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some were saying, it's he. Others were saying, no, but it's someone like him. But he kept saying, I am the man. But they kept asking him, then how were your eyes opened? And he answered them, the man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and he said to me, go to Siloam and wash. Then I went and washed, and I received my sight. And they said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also began to ask him how he had received his sight. He said to them, he put mud on my eyes, then I washed, and now I see. And some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner perform such signs? And they were very divided. So they said again to the blind man, what do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened. He said, he's a prophet. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received the sight and asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? Then how does he now see? His parents answered, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But we do not know how it is that he now sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He's of age, and he will speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to them as the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents had said, he's of age, go ask him. So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind, and they said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. And he answered, I do not know whether he's a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. And they said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he answered them, I've told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want also to become his disciples? Then they reviled him, saying, you are his disciples, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. The man answered, here's an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And they answered him, you were born entirely in sins, and are you trying to teach us? And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him out, and when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered, and who is he, sir? Tell me, so that I may believe in him. And Jesus said to him, you have seen him, And the one speaking with you is he. He said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, I came into this world for judgment so that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said to him, surely we are not blind, are we? And Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have not have sinned. But now that you say, we see, your sin remains. God has blessed us with his tremendous love, provision in abundance, protection, and grace of things we do not deserve. He has given us the opportunity for eternal life, along with his guidance and comfort for this life. Are we still putting forth the effort like Ray? Did we put more effort in this year than we did last year? Are we going to put more effort in next year? Because he's the King of Kings. He holds the key to the kingdom. Shouldn't we glorify his Father in him at every turn, every breath? In one sense, it's impossible, but shouldn't that be not just simply our desire, but shouldn't that be our every moment goal? What can I do, Father Christ? What can I do that brings me closer to your kingdom? Corinthians 10:31. So whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do everything for the glory of God. There's going to be distractions. We're still all learning how to prioritize. We don't have to get an A+ grade. We have to put forth the effort. And at the same time, we can't say simply, I need a little bit more time in education. If we never, ever leave the classroom, what good is the degree? James 4 and verse 17. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does not, to him it is sin. Some of us have sat here for decades, read this book for decades. We don't have excuses anymore, do we? But we keep trying to find them. This fall holy day season pictures the kingdom. Christ's return, and ultimately the final judgment day. I think you already know where you would like to end up. Are we putting in the effort to get there? Let's finish up with 1 Peter 1, verse 13. First Peter 1, verse 13. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Discipline yourselves. Set all of your hope on the grace that Jesus Christ will bring you when he is revealed. Like obedient children, do not be conformed to the desires that you formerly had in ignorance. Instead, as he who called you is holy, be holy yourselves in all of your conduct. For it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. If you invoke as Father the one who judges all people impartially according to their deeds, live in reverent fear during the time of your exile. You know that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your ancestors, not with perishable things like silver or gold, but with the precious blood of your Savior, like that of a lamb without deceit, defect, or blemish. He was destined before the foundation of the world, but he was revealed at the end of the ages for your sake. Through him, you have come to trust in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are set on God. Now that you have purified your souls by your obedience to the truth, so that you have genuine mutual love, love for one another deeply from the heart. You have been born anew, not of perishable, but imperishable seed, through the living and enduring word of God. For all flesh is like grass in all of its glory, like the flower of grass. The grass withers and the flower falls, but the word of the Lord endures forever. That word is the good news that has been announced to you.